Welcome back to the FKT podcast. I'm your host, Heather Anderson. Today I'm joined by Carl Sabe, who has once again set a staggering time on an iconic long distance trail. Tune in to hear about his experience setting the supported time on New Zealand's 3,000 kilometer long Te Arora Trail by completing it in just 31 days, 19 hours, and 40 minutes. Thank you so much for making time to join us on the show again.
Yeah, thanks for having me again, and nice to talk to you again, Heather.
Yeah, it's been a minute since you finished your PCT hike.
Mm-hmm.
So first, I would love it if you could talk about what the Te Arora is, where it's at. Just give our listeners an overview of what this trail is like.
So basically, the Te Arora, so that's Maori for the long pathway, is a trail that spans the entire length of New Zealand, North Island, as well as South Island. And in total, it's a bit over 2,000 miles, about 3,000 kilometers. And yeah, it was finished about 13 years ago. So it's a pretty new trail, but it's getting really, really popular. I actually hiked the trail the first year it existed back in 2012.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And so it is obviously a beautiful trail. It's the length of New Zealand, and it's still far from being in the league of the Appalachian Trail or the Pacific Crest Trail, but it is getting popular. Many through hikers come from past Appalachian Trail or PCT experiences and then decide to hike the length of New Zealand. So it is within the mindset and the through hiking community feeling of long distance hiking. And to compare it to trails like the Pacific Crest Trail and the Appalachian Trail, has a bit more variation in the sense that you need to kayak a few sections. As far as terrain goes, it's comparable to the Pacific Crest Trail, as you have volcanic sections, you have alpine sections, but then also you have long stretches of beach, a lot of rides that you have to negotiate. So it's adventurous. It's a lot of fun. It's a beautiful trail.
Yeah, so that kind of answers one of the other questions I had. Obviously, you have a history with setting FKTs on very long trails, but I didn't realize you had actually already completed the TA. Yeah, so I was wondering what led you to want to attempt an FKT on it. Is because you had already had experience on this trail?
Exactly. Or? So when I thru-hiked the Te Araroa Trail, I just graduated from university. And yeah, obviously at that age, you are extremely open-minded and very sensitive to new experiences. And so, yeah, basically I lost my heart in New Zealand through hiking, being out there in the wild. And yeah, I went back to New Zealand 2 years later, where I actually started my career more or less as an ultra runner and adventure racer. And so, yeah, it had already been 10 years since my last visit of New Zealand. And obviously I became such a passionate fan of long distance hiking. I have always been, but long distance running the Appalachian Trail, running the PCT twice, the Via Alpina in Europe. So yeah, having not been in New Zealand for the last 10 years, it felt like time to go back and revisit some of the places I experienced as a hiker and see how different the trail would be to me and experience it again. So yeah, that's why I chose the Te Araroa Trail as a new adventure.
So in a lot of ways, this was sort of a full circle moment for you.
Yeah. And honestly, yeah, there was like the full circle moment. As I said, 2 years after the Te Araroa Trail, I went back to New Zealand. And I discovered a passion for, I wouldn't call it suffering, but having a hard time in the mountains, which is what you like as well, of course. So back then I signed up a race called the Coast to Coast. So you traverse the South Island of New Zealand in 1 day, kayaking almost 40 miles and then running over a mountain pass and cycling as well. And actually there's a common stretch between the Te Araroa Trail and that race. Running that section on the day that the race was held during the attempt. So I was among the racers, and it was like, I remembered the trail and the community of that really special race. So that was like a full circle moment for sure. I must admit I was a bit emotional that day because somehow it felt like I wouldn't call it, I would be ready to retire. But that day I was like, yeah, if I finish this trail, maybe I can just be happy with what I achieved and maybe I don't need any more long distance trails to run or whatever. It was a unique moment for sure. Yeah.
So you kayaked, and I had been curious because I know you as a runner and a hiker about your previous kayaking experience.
Yeah.
So it sounds like you did have some.
Yeah. My kayaking history goes back to racing the coast to coast. So for that, I joined a local kayak club here in Belgium. I learned how to roll in a kayak and everything. I needed a certain certificate to be allowed on a pretty rough river, a grade 2 river with a lot of rapids. But since then, yeah, basically I didn't spend time anymore in a kayak. Until then, yeah, as the FKT attempt was approaching, I was, as usual, already navigating my time available between work and being able to spend time running. And so basically I decided not to train it at all, the kayaking, that I would still have the skill to do it. I mean, I know how to paddle. The longest stretch of kayaking is after a bit over 1,200 kilometers. So I thought, yeah, if I train this kayaking, I probably have lost quite a bit of it already. And in reality, it will be 2 days of hardship and some suffering. And if I train for it or not, I will get blisters. I will have a hard time. So yeah, eventually I didn't train and I just went back to the same club I signed up years ago here in Belgium just to refresh on my skills. Somebody helped me out, like focus on this and that to save energy. And that was it. When I through hiked the trail, I didn't remember honestly, but it had been raining quite a bit the days before. And so the river was quite fast at the time. And so now, yeah, I sat down in the kayak, I started paddling, and then I realized, okay, this is going to be flat water for 120 kilometers because there had been a drought for 3 weeks. And so basically not paddling meant not moving. There was a headwind mostly, so not paddling meant going backwards again. Work for every yard, every meter. So that was a hard time. And then, yeah, towards the coast, the tides have an influence. So you have to go out on an outgoing tide. Otherwise, you have the tide coming in and then it's even more impossible to kayak. So luckily, that timed pretty well. But I did realize at the time, if I would have mistimed the outgoing tide, I would have had to call it and wait another 10 hours for the tide to shift because I was depleted of energy. I was blistered. My arms were so sore. My legs were cramping up. So yeah, it was hard.
I can only imagine. I'm not a kayaker at all. And I just, yeah, that's impressive.
At first you're like, oh yeah, my legs are going to have time to recover a little bit from running. And then 1 hour in, you get cramps because your legs desperately want to continue moving. And you're just sitting down, not being able to move your legs. And yeah,
it's not the break you were hoping for.
No. But so the local support had been so incredible in New Zealand. And also during that kayaking stretch, so there were 3 people who joined me, better kayakers than I was.
Okay.
At least I wasn't solo on the river. We could chat. They could help me out. They could say, okay, now there's a difficult stretch or whatever. Yeah, we spent one night together on the river. And then the second day I was able to finish up with them. But yeah, that was a huge difference mentally. If I would only be able to focus on my pain and my suffering, then yeah, I would have slowed down, I guess. But towards them, I felt like I needed to harden up and just push on. And yeah, that's what I did. Yeah.
Yeah, I was actually going to ask if you had some experienced paddlers joining you for that section.
So a few weeks before the FKT attempt, I reached out to the local kayaking club. And yeah, as I mentioned earlier, the coast to coast was 2 weeks after. And a couple of members of the club were racing the coast to coast. So they wanted the longest kayaking section or training. So that matched pretty well with what I was doing. But for them, it was desperately slow.
Right.
They said it was fine. Yeah.
It's still good training.
Yeah.
So circling back a little bit, you mentioned that the outgoing tide was really essential for the kayaking. But I know also on the TA, especially in the North Island, you're on a lot of beaches. So can you talk about, obviously, the Appalachian Trail, the Via Alpina, the PCT, the tides are not a part of those trails. So can you talk about the tidal aspect of this attempt and how that impacted what you were doing?
Only one specific moment made it have a lot of impact. So basically, every day we had to think about the tidal crossings for that day. And so obviously, my crew was helping me out with that. And then I would have to decide on where to stop thinking about the tides I had to do that day or the day after. So could mean that maybe I would have had a good day of 90 kilometers for that day. But then, yeah, if I would have slept like usual and then started as usual, I would have ended up at the crossing at high tide and I would have to wait. So then my crew asked me to push on another 20 kilometers or something. So I would be closer to the tidal crossing and I would be there in time. Yeah, at one point there were so many because obviously I was doing 100 kilometers every day. So yeah, for true hikers, maybe that was one every day. But for me, it was sometimes 4 to 5 crossings. Not all of them were impassable at high tide, so I could swim quite a few of them. Obviously, because I don't have the true hiker backpack and everything. But at one point, when we were having one tidal crossing after the other, we missed out on one. We overlooked it. And basically, I turned around a corner around some cliffs at the sea, at the ocean. And I was rock hopping for 5 minutes and then realized, yeah, this is going to be impossible to do it safely. And then, yeah, I had to return for low tide, which took 8 hours. Luckily, we had a bit of a storm the day before and we spent the night in an Airbnb just for once because usually we camp out, of course. And then we called them, said, yeah, you mind us coming back for a bit because it was still close by. And then I did manage to catch up on some sleep and eat a little bit. But it felt weird to be just sitting around during the day on an FKT attempt because all day long I'm like, I have to move, I have to move. And then suddenly I'm like, yeah, just hanging out in an Airbnb. So that was weird. But yeah, my crew was amazing briefing me on all the crossings. And then also they checked all the apps and how true hikers explained it. And then most of them, even on high tide, you could safely swim or whatever. But it was present and sometimes stressful as well to have to negotiate them.
Yeah, I mean, there's not a lot of hard deadlines normally in, you know, one of these where you're like, I have to be at this point by this time, you know. Yeah.
And then basically because of those 8 hours, I mean, it's only 8 hours, but that's evolved a little bit into me missing the ferry between the North Island and the South Island by just 2 hours. Because we had to book the ferry like 3 months in advance. And I was like, yeah, I hope or I assume I can run 100 kilometers a day on the North Island. So then ideally we take the ferry at midnight so we don't waste time during the day catching the ferry. But then, yeah. I had to run a very difficult technical section towards the end of the North Island. And so then I wasn't able to catch up anymore. And Mr. Perry, my crew was able to take it, but I have to make the crossing of the North Island the morning after.
So did you take another ferry or did you fly? Like, how did you get it?
The crew gave me a few options. And yeah, there are really small planes with like 10 people in that fly back and forth. So we were able to, I was able to jump on one of those planes. Yeah. Would have preferred to ferry at night, of course, but yeah, given the situation, it was the quickest way to go to the South End.
So obviously I'd love to have you talk a little bit more about your crew because I know they're integral to all of your records. So just kind of tell us a little bit about who was there, what their roles were, was it the same as your PCT record, like what they did for you and how that all played out.
So, yeah, the cool thing is they were the exact same crew as the PCT. So, yeah, that means a huge thing already, of course, because they have the PCT experience. And PCT on a high snow year and fire year and whatever, it doesn't really get more adventurous and difficult logistically than that. They were very experienced, right. Of course. They were super excited to travel to New Zealand to support me on the Tiararua Trail. And so basically, it was the same crew. My good friend Henry was crew leader again, who was organizing everything from mostly my daily distance and advising me on pushing or not having to push. And then he is usually the guy who hikes in to get me to do longer distances every day. So he's a very strong hiker who can easily do 20 miles to get me to a place to maximize my distance for that day. That means a lot as well. Because the record I was breaking or trying to break was set by a New Zealand runner who was supported by his parents. And obviously there is a big difference between a young energetic, optimistic, knowledgeable crew compared to two parents who are, yeah, excited as well, but who have their limits of having to camp near a road or whatever. And then I had my wife joining again.
Yeah.
Who was always a big mental support for me, of course. And then two cousins of my wife, Marie and Anna, who were also hiking in and running some sections with me, but also cooking and helping out with the driving and everything. And then we had Kobe, and Kobe's plan was like during the PCT to run like many, many miles with me. I think he ran over 1,000 miles on the PCT with me. We had so many great times and moments.
Yeah.
But you might have heard or read, but on day three, Kobe and I got attacked by wild dogs. And so, yeah.
Yes, I definitely want to hear more about that.
So basically, long story short, he took the hit for me, so to speak. Or, I mean, we didn't decide on that, but we were running together. They attacked us together, but yeah, they chose him. They bit him. He fell and he broke his elbow as he was falling. And I got away without any harm. And so we hiked on together as they left the dogs. But then we realized, he had to go to the hospital. And then we heard the diagnosis of a broken elbow, which is like, of course, a pain to run with, especially on the rain in New Zealand. So that was sad. And then, he decided to stay and help out as good as he could. And then as we got to the South Island, he started running with a sling. And then, especially the easier sections, he was trying to join me. But that was sad because we were looking forward to our many hours again, spending in the wilderness together. So that was the crew. And as usual, it's four or five people. But we tried to keep it to one vehicle and to keep it low-key. Yeah, but all of them were very important to me. And we had a great adventure together.
That having that all-star team, like you mentioned, they've already done the PCT with you. They know you. They know what you need. They know when to push. They know when to give you food. That is such an incredibly valuable thing to have on an attempt like this.
Exactly. That's incredible. And maybe one extremely fun fact. So because Kobe was not able to join me a lot on the North Island, as I was having my hard time on the river, on the Whanganui River when I was kayaking, suddenly, my brother-in-law, Joe, who supported me on the first PCT of my three Barkley runs and the Appalachian Trail, who wasn't able to make it, suddenly was there. Total surprise. Because, he heard about Kobe and what happened, and he knew I was having a hard time because I had to run alone many, many hours. And then suddenly, because of his work, suddenly it worked out to come over for 2 weeks. And then, I was never expecting him to be there, and that was the nicest surprise. So that was the full dream team and full circle.
That's amazing.
So my parents are retired, and they rented the camper and took care of my son again. But so the fun thing is, I mean, me and my friends and family are having a great time running these FKTs, but my son, he's 5 years old now, but he was there the entire Via Alpina, the PCT, now the New Zealand. So he's like, he loves camping. He loves playing in rivers and just being outdoors. So that's really cool to see him grow up.
This is like a normal thing for him now.
He's like asking things like, when are we camping again? Or when can we sleep in the roof tent again? And things like that. So he's very adventurous.
That's awesome. I love that he is able to accompany you on these.
Well, now, if I would do something again in the future at his age, it's probably the last time he can do it, and then he won't be able to do it anymore.
Right.
But we have summer holidays, and if I on the northern hemisphere, there are some long trails there as well. Still.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're just going to have to switch to summer holiday.
Yeah, exactly.
So he can go camping. Just real quick, I want to circle back to the wild dog story since we kind of started talking about it. So first of all, I didn't know New Zealand had wild dogs. But also, how many of them were there? Did they just come out of nowhere? Like, talk about what that actually...
Everybody always jokes, like, New Zealand is the safest country on the planet, right? Especially compared to Australia with scorpions, snakes, sharks, whatever. New Zealand has just birds that cannot fly. Yeah. And then,
right.
Apparently, there are dog issues. Usually, they are dogs that belong to a farm or belonged to a farm and then rewild. And then they are out in the forest. They have predators and they start hunting and start to become aggressive. And so literally at that spot where we got attacked, the next 3-4 weeks, we encountered thru hikers. They attacked in that area, maybe 40, 50 thru hikers.
Yeah.
And so that was only later on that we heard out about that. But so it is, especially in the North Island, the northern part of the North Island, it's really an issue.
Yeah, that makes more sense. When I said wild dogs, I'm thinking like dingoes or something like they have in Australia. And I was just like, I've been to New Zealand. Nobody told me about this.
When I was running close to Auckland, just the night before, there was a herd of dogs that got wild and they killed like 200 sheep or something just on one streak. Yeah.
Wow.
They are, on it closely, the government, but at the moment it's still a bit of an issue. And I mean, wow. I know about black bears and rattlesnake on the PCT and everything. But it could have ended on day three. The way it happened. So,
yeah. Well, I'm glad that you're okay. And I'm glad that Kobe recovered.
Kobe is a fine.
Yeah, I'm glad. I mean, I remember seeing that and just being, I think like everyone, very concerned and also very like confused how that happened. Yeah,
obviously it was summer holiday in New Zealand. And so, there was not much going on. So basically we were headline of the news there because of what happened. But then thousands of New Zealand people started following the live tracker. And it was the most amazing experience if I had to run through a town, there were always people there cheering for me and then children with signs they made in all colors like "Go Carl, Go Carl." And then people were making cookies for us and inviting us to their homes. And if we have to find a silver lining for it, we found it by really getting to connect with the local community and the New Zealand people.
Well, I mean, that is a silver lining for sure, to have that local support, I think. Did a lot of the people, obviously they came out and cheered you on, but did you have local runners coming out and pacing you, joining you for sections?
And then we slept in some people's gardens and they would be like actually following, like everybody loves to follow dots on live tracking pages and everything, but we're like, when you're doing 100K a day, tomorrow night you'll be at less than 1 kilometer from our place. So we suggest you come over to our place, have a shower, you look dirty.
Yeah, we can smell you through the camera.
So that was really amazing. And honestly, through the major towns, so the Te Araroa does go through Auckland, through Wellington as well, Wanaka on the South Island, Queenstown. Honestly, I felt like Forrest Gump. There was like people on the side of the road and they were like, "Can we join?" I'm like, "Sure." And then, and New Zealand people, they love to chat. And so there were like 50 or 40 New Zealand people just like blah, 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 blah among each other. And it was just fun because usually it was a bit harder to run through town because I run for nature and for mountains and things like that. So through town, like Auckland was like 80 kilometers of concrete or sidewalks I had to navigate. But then doing it with 30 people, it's enjoyable.
Right. Yeah. It's kind of like running Western States when you are coming into Auburn and then you just have people everywhere cheering you on because you're on a road and whatever.
That was something, obviously, I will remember many of the landscapes and everything, but the warmth and the welcoming of the people will stay with me for many years again.
And I feel like, too, that's a little bit of a difference between, this trail and some of the others you've done, because you don't really run through big towns on the PCT, so.
Mm-hmm. And also it's so safe, right? I mean, people would be like, you'll be passing our house in 2 days or something. We're not there, but the house is open. Get your crew to have a shower or they can relax in our living room. And they did, never even the people, but everybody leaves their house is open over there. They don't lock the doors. And that's so beautiful to see.
I mean, the people of New Zealand are just wonderful, like so generous and kind, and I loved my time there. So absolutely. Well, aside from wild dogs, did you have any other animal encounters or anything that would be unusual or interesting?
Well, obviously I'm a big fan of kiwis, like the birds. Just one morning I heard one, I'm sure, and maybe saw it a little bit. Having through hiked the Te Araroa Trail, that's where my love for birds and bird song started. And so, being in the subtropical rainforest is just an experience to run through it, especially when you hear so many birds. So that's very mindful. And but you don't have the excitement of seeing a black bear or things like that.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, that's also kind of an okay thing too. You don't have to worry about snakes or bears.
I could sleep with food in my tent and have a few snacks when I woke up.
Did you utilize, I know you said you guys camped, did you utilize some of the backcountry huts?
Not everybody knows, but I remember from my first half year in New Zealand, they have a bit over 1,000 backcountry huts that are open to everyone. You just have to buy a pass for a couple of months, which isn't expensive at all. And then, you can go to these huts and spend the night in them. Obviously, all those huts were designed in a time that the Te Araroa Trail wasn't there yet. So they are usually six bunk huts. And as it got so popular, usually we were just camping next to a hut, but it's always some shelter or some safety, or you have the porch that's that shelter where you can have your dinner. And even if you're not sleeping inside, it offers some comfort to be near a hut. They have some tap water from the rain that gets caught and things like that. But I think, I did get to spend maybe almost 10 nights or a bit less in huts. And then it was now to really sleep among the true hikers and be among the true hikers. So that's always fun.
So I know you talked a little bit about how this trail compares to some of the others you've done. What I'd like to know, because I mean, I know what I experienced hiking in New Zealand, which was not on this trail, but how was the trail in comparison to some of the other trails you've done?
It had its ups and downs. Or I don't know if you're referring to that, but you can be happily cruising down a valley. And then suddenly I was always running with the track on my watch. And then suddenly it showed me like, go right here. And I'm like, go right where? And then, small valley and a small stream. And then the bush bashing starts. And then you're back on the proper New Zealand trail. So North Island was very runnable overall, but South Island was, it was mentally a bit hard because on the PCT, you know the trail, right? I mean, there are some rocky sections, but in general, you can say, this is my average speed throughout the day. And most days that will be almost it. Also because you don't really have the steep climbs on the PCT. You have long climbs, but not the steepest ones.
Mm-hmm. Right.
To start a day and spend 10 hours for your first marathon, that's a bit demotivating. And then you just have to stay calm and relax and know, the terrain will change and I will be able to run today. But that wouldn't be a rare case that I would just have like a morning stretch of 35 kilometers and that it would take me 8 or 9 hours just because it's so, you're climbing on the side of a cliff or a mountain or something and there's the undergrowth and everything. So, it was challenging, I must say. And then sometimes, in their search to improve the trail more and more every year. So there are some road sections still. And then they try to get right away through private land. But then especially those stretches were like, let's get the true hikers to make a trail. There wasn't a trail through going through. They just thought if 200 true hikers go through here, there will be a faint trail. And then next year they do it again and there will become a proper trail. But that works if there's has been a trail once and that everybody can follow the same track. But usually that would end up people spreading out because they lost the trail. And then you're just having a hard time, honestly. Yeah. So I had to be calm and mindful and not be frustrated by it. And I have my experience, of course, from the Barclay as well, that slow gets you forward as well and just move and eventually it will get easier.
Right. I remember my first hike I did in New Zealand. The first few miles were lovely trail. And then like you described, all of a sudden it was just a stream and brush.
And What
happened?
They actually want you to walk in the stream because that's easy going in the stream, right?
And then finding a little tiny medallion on the tree, like really far away.
I remember there was like a 5K stretch in a river, like just, from now the trail is the river and just pull on in the river. And then, you have to, I mean, that's something that worried me setting off on this FKT attempt. Like flooding is really an issue because there are so many susceptible areas for flooding, right? You can have streams that are ankle deep or knee deep on a good day, but they are known for torrential downpours in New Zealand. And I was expecting to lose at least 1, 2 or 3 days having to wade out in the river level to go down again. Mm-hmm. And I was lucky, avoided the worst flooding, but yeah, it's definitely an issue in New Zealand.
Did you end up having any dangerous or difficult river fords?
No, some exciting ones, but not dangerous. I'm always a bit risk averse. So every time the trail notes would say, okay, do not attempt this after rain, we would check, has it rained or will it rain, or what's the weather forecast, not only for that area, but also for the mountains where that river drains.
Right. Kind of along those lines. Obviously, New Zealand's a really wet country. You've got the beach, you're swimming, you've got these rivers. How did your feet hold up with all of this wetness?
I have my foot strategy, being traumatized from my first PCT in 2016.
I was wondering.
I was traumatized enough to do all means necessary not to have such big issues with my feet again. So that means creams, foot baths, powders, yeah, fresh socks all the time. But then, yeah, in New Zealand, I would say 50% of the time you're running in wet shoes or with wet feet. So yeah, I did get blisters that got pretty bad at one stage. Not that painful, but it started, that's probably a fun story. But at one point, I did have to text Nick Fowler, because did you see the pictures of his little toe, his pinky toe?
Yeah.
Hey, Nick, did your toe grow back? And he's like, yeah, it's fine. And then I'm like, okay, then I'll be fine as well, because it was getting to that, not as worse as Nick, but it was getting pretty bad. Yeah. And Nick, obviously, you know him. He was like, he saw the picture. He's like, dude, you're fine. You're fine.
It is incredible the things we can do to our feet, and they will regrow. But definitely preferable not to have to worry about that.
Yeah. But then at the same time, or when it was getting pretty bad, we met a surgeon who was very experienced in people who got in fires and like skin issues.
Skin grafts. Yeah.
And so he prescribed me something specific, like a fatty patch to put in between my toes, because it was staying too moist, but it had to be a bit more fatty. And then actually it healed on the go after that.
Oh, wow. That's a fortuitous person to meet along the way.
Yeah. It was my parents who met him on the campground, and they were like, oh yeah, our son is doing this, but he's struggling a little bit with his pinky toe. And they were like, yeah, show us a picture. And then he explained us how to get it fixed.
Yeah, I remember that you had such a terrible time with your feet on your first PCT. And so when I was reading about, you know, the river and just all the wetness, I was just like, oh my God, I wonder how his feet were. Circling back one time kind of to the trail conditions and the bush bashing and things like that, how was navigation for this trail? Was it difficult?
In parts, yes, on the South Island, because of the bush bashing, and especially obviously when you're running an FKT, you're spending a lot of time at night as well, or in the dark. Once you get above tree line, you go through tussock, like long grasses, and then they come in bunches, and it's really easy to lose the trail.
Right.
So that cost me quite a bit of time. And then you get into like really deep mud, and the mud was pretty epic in some places as well.
Yeah.
It stayed fun. I mean, when I was having a hard time navigating, again, I slowed down a little bit and found the trail every time again. But usually when it's difficult to navigate, they put higher markers with big orange triangles. But at night with my head torch, I wasn't able to see the next marker. And then I zoomed in on my watch to have the GPS file really close by, and then just purely went on GPS. Yeah. But the terrain, it's so challenging in New Zealand. But one challenge I maybe wasn't expecting was on the North Island, that, and true hikers will tell you that as well, there is quite a way still to go on the North Island to make it like proper single track. And because of a disease they have with their giant trees, the kauri trees, they close down quite a lot of forests, because as true hikers, we take the disease from one forest to the next. Yeah, so they make you disinfect your shoes before entering a forest, but still they close down a few of them. And so honestly, there was quite a bit of road running on the North Island, and that made it challenging for me, because usually the why question I never get, because I'm running the PCT, it's epic all the time. The AT is epic all the time. The Via Alpina was epic all the time. And not that I was wondering, what am I doing here? But it could become very long, some of those stretches on the roads. And then many of the true hikers decide to hitchhike a few of those sections. But that was pretty hard because, yeah, on the road, you do have some time to think. The New Zealand roads are no ways adapted to true hikers running on the side of the road or on the shoulder. And so that was a bit challenging, right. But that was only the North Island. The South Island was fine, of course. But yeah, that was mentally a bit of a challenge because usually I'm just super, super excited because I'm spending so much time on trails and on single track, which gives me a lot of energy. And I mean, it didn't slow me down because I know what I set out for. But mentally, it was a bit difficult.
I have a lot of friends who have thru-hiked the trail. And that's one of the things they've always told me is that the North Island, there's a lot of road walking. And that it's difficult, and especially as people who like to be on single track in the mountains.
My advantage was at my pace of 100 kilometers a day, they would pass quickly as well. My pace would pick up a bit on the road.
Right.
But then again, yeah, I'm a relatively fast runner on trails, and especially with elevation change, like on the PCT. Yeah, I wouldn't even call it up, and I would call it flat up or something. So I would hardly lose
yeah.
speeds going up big passes. But I do think there are faster road runners than me, or like the more classic ultra runners or road ultra runners would have quite an advantage compared to me on an FKT on the Tierra Roa trail because, yeah, my fastest pace is not very fast even on roads, whereas I could keep that same pace in the mountains, but that doesn't help me on the road.
Yeah. With that in mind, you're talking about a lot of the road. What do you think, and it doesn't have to be super accurate, but just how did you feel as far as the breakdown of how much time you were on road versus single track versus kayaking?
North Island is for sure 50% road, so quite a lot. Yeah. And then maybe, 8% kayaking or something. Yeah. And the rest, either gravel or single track or, yeah. South Island got better, of course, because it's more wild and more remote.
Yeah.
It does stick a little bit to the east of the Alps, where at times I would have preferred it to be more in the Alps.
Right.
But you stay close to the mountains and you go up and down. Or it might be too complicated to have it like entirely in the Alps for resupplying. And it's pretty wild with all the glaciers and everything. So
yeah.
That would be difficult.
Well, Carl, thank you so much for coming on the show today and sharing about this experience. It's just been incredible to see all the things you've done, and to watch this one unfold was really, really great as well. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks for having me again. It was fun to talk about it again and to relive some of the memories.
Thanks again, Carl, for coming on the show. You can read about his FKTs on the website, fastestknowntime.com, and learn more about his adventures on Instagram at Carl Sabe.